But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
A good Friday afternoon and welcome in to Grant and Danny. We are live on a field trip Friday out and about. We are in Arlington over in Clarendon at Hyde Social, where we'll be hanging out from 2 to 6:30 East time today, right here in the DMV, getting you ready for the Commanders and the Bucks. Wherever you're listening, all over the country, on the Odyssey app, thank you for making this show part of your day. We are going to get you ready for playoff football in the nation's capital. We're live all over the DMV on the flagship 106.7. You can stream our show on high-definition video right now on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. Got a great show planned for you. We'll scout the Bucks with TJ Reeves, their sideline reporter. What do we need to know about Tampa Bay's injury report? That's at 3 coming up in 1 hour. Longtime ESPN NFL host Trey Wingo stops by to break down all the playoff games with us at 4:30 today. And a future Hall of Famer, perhaps, cornerback Patrick Peterson, our Odyssey NFL insider, is on the show live today at 5:30. We're also giving away Caps tickets at 4, so make sure you're listening at that time. Danny, it's a long time coming, a football Friday ahead of a wild card round playoff game for the good guys.
It's been a minute, dude. I mean, that 7-9 thing, whatever you want to call that, that Ron Rivera year one, that was fun. That was a bit of empty calorie. That was the donut. We said so at the time. I'm not going to put the donut down. I'm going to eat the donut. I wish I had more donuts. This is different. This is different. Year one, Adam Peters, Pro Football Talk's Executive of the Year. Not that that's an official award, but it's, it tells you what the conversation is. Year one, Dan Quinn. Year one, Jaden Daniels. First full year of ownership for the Harris Ownership Group, a.k.a. the Hogs. 12 wins for the first time since I was 12 hitting nukes in McLean Little League, since you were in diapers. The world is different. Win, lose, or draw, this has been an amazing ride. What an unbelievable turnaround from just a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever. Think about where we were and think about where we are right now.
So I thought about this last night, and we'll actually talk about this later in the show, but I actually believe that if you look at the 14 teams in the playoffs right now, you got your 7 seeds in the NFC and then over in the AFC. I don't think there is a team with less pressure on them to play well or win that has more that it has to worry about, let's say. If you were doing a ranking 1 through 14, like the free and easy outfit here is the Commanders. Mm-hmm. There's not a single team in the NFL playing more with house money at this point. You could say Denver wasn't supposed to be here, rookie quarterback Bo Nix, but it's year 2 of Sean Payton. They're further along in their build. They were supposed to have kind of turned a corner by the second season. You could say the Chargers, first year with their head coach, that – they brought in this offseason,
yep,
Jim Harbaugh. But they've got a veteran quarterback who was expected to be really good in Justin Herbert, who's an MVP candidate year in and year out at the position, as one of the best passers in the league. I just think the Commanders, with the first year, to your point, of this ownership group really running the operation, with a GM who'd never done it before in his first season doing it, with a head coach who's a retread who comes over and gets his second opportunity, and go back to when he was hired and what people like me and so many others were worried about and nervous about with Dan Quinn. This team has overachieved every step of the way. And the gift that you get now is to go play a playoff game where if you win, it's awesome. And if you lose, respectfully, that stings, that stunk, that's awful. But we're on to the offseason because this team's supposed to be good for a while now.
Yeah, again, year one of a regime. I did a hit this morning. I've done a number of appearances. I'm sure you have on various channels, and people want to know about this squad. What usually happens, I've made this point a million times, I'll keep making it. In year one of a regime, go back in Washington's history. Go to profootballreference.com and hit that little Washington thing. Then go to the tab that says team history. What usually happens is you win 4, 5, 6 games in year one of a new regime, right? Because you're getting rid of the old, getting rid of all the barnacles that were sort of stuck, just collecting paychecks, going through the motions. You want to establish your own culture. Well, they were doing all that stuff, right? You got a bunch of short-term deals, a bunch of veterans, guys whose primes are behind him. In the case of Bobby Wagner, second team All-Pro, by the way. We'll talk about that. But all of a sudden, You don't apologize for the fact that you've been twice as successful, literally twice as successful as what all the really smart people when the really tall towers in Vegas predicted you would be. They're over-under to start the season with 6.5 wins, depending on where you looked. Some had 7, some had 6.5. I saw a couple 7.5 rogue agents, but they won 12 big win games. Are they as good as every 12-win team that I've ever seen? Maybe, maybe not. I don't care. The fact is they're eons, light years ahead of where they're probably supposed to be, light years ahead of where they've been over the last several decades. If we're enjoying a run like Kansas City has enjoyed, you go, 12 wins. It's a little bit disappointing that the sixth seed. That's not what it's been like around here. As a starving gentleman, you hand me, as Eddie Murphy once said, you hand me a cracker, I'm not going to ask you if it's a Ritz. Like, I'm so thrilled to be eating at this point in time. They're getting ready to play a playoff game, dude.
Well, here's
they got
the
a legit shot to win it.
Here's the big deal, is that they have a playoff game on the road to the division champion, which is how it has to work when you're a wild card team, and they have a really good chance to win the thing. Now, whether they do or not, we could go through, and we will today, 100 different machinations of how the game could play out and why Tampa Bay is going to be a pain to play. Baker Mayfield, with 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, is pretty special throwing the football and on a heater, right? Mike Evans is going to be difficult for them to defend. We'll talk about Marshawn Lattimore playing, but we do get Lattimore-Evans playoff edition. Get your popcorn ready. They're going to run the ball on Washington with Bucky Irving. That's going to be a problem. Stopping him, stopping the top five rushing offense in the league on the other side is going to be an issue. When you play a playoff team that won a division, even the not-so-good division champions like Tampa Bay, who give you a chance to beat them, you're not going to be favored.
Yeah.
But it also could have been that you're going on the road to play an elite team that you don't have much of a chance against. And that is not what's happening here at all. Washington absolutely can win this game. They're a three-point underdog. This is effectively, the way betting lines are done now, basically on a neutral site, this will be a point, point and a half kind of spread at this juncture. Take it every single time. You got Jaden Daniels, who might be the best athlete, the best player on the field all purpose, and you see where the chips fall, but cannot wait to take a deep dive all day long into the matchup. Let's get to some news and notes for you out of Ashburn today. We start with the aforementioned Marshawn Lattimore. Dan Quinn did say that he is in. Lattimore is going to play. He will go head-to-head with Mike Evans. Now, Quinn didn't say this, but I'll tell you this. Lattimore is going to travel with Evans. Those guys hate each other. They get into knockdown, drag-out street fights on the field in some of the matchups where they play one another. It's old school, too.
Yes.
Like, you don't see legitimate hatred between players very often. And in their matchups, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Lattimore, Evans, I'm sure there's a mutual respect for the other guy being pretty good. But this is not a let's trade jerseys and sign each other's numbers on the back with a nice message after the game. They can't stand each other. And it's going to be awesome to see them all over the field. No matter where Evans lines up, Lattimore is going to be right there with them. This is why Adam Peters traded for Marshawn Lattimore.
That's the whole point, right? Is in your own division, you got a couple superstar wide receivers where you need to upgrade that position massively. You need to do that for the next couple of seasons. CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Malik Nabers now in New York. So that makes sense. Now for playoff-type matchups, you're going to find everybody's got a weapon. Everybody's got somebody that's really, really hard to stop. You need to be able to do that. For a team that won 12 games, you don't know, right? Mr. Washington. Sounds funny to say for a team that won 12 games, they really need this guy to win a playoff game. Because they won 12 games mostly without him. I mean, the one game he played, he did fine against A.J. Brown. Nobody does well. The other game, he kind of had to leave. Not much there. But
they weren't
telling
playing in Tampa Bay, though.
But they weren't playing in a postseason environment where everything is tighter, and you need him to try to negate Mike Evans. You're not shutting him out. That's not how the league works. There's so few of those type instances where a guy, pretty much off the scoreboard. But to me, you need to be able to say, we're not going to get destroyed. We're not going to have every third down converted against us. We're going to be able to get these guys into some bad situations, hopefully force Baker Mayfield to make a mistake or two. They need to be able to shore up different things, right? It's always talk about the leaky dam, right? You can only plug so many fingers and so many holes to try to stop it before you get a deluge. Bucky Irving will kill you. Jalen McMillan will kill you. If you negate one of their massive chess pieces in Mike Evans to some degree, limit him, now all of a sudden you can play 10-on-10, commit some more resources, and have a better shot at it.
The other thing about they won 12 games without him, or close to it, right?
Mostly, right.
Obviously in the New Orleans game. But they have one win this year against the team that finished over 500. and that was Philadelphia, and Hurts got hurt when Washington was down by double-digit points. When they've leveled up and played the varsity opponents, it has felt like they need reinforcements.
Yep.
It has felt like, damn, if we just had one more corner, if we just had – well, now you got it. Like, this was the point. He did not play in all but two of the games since they acquired him. They would not have traded for him if this was a rental for the remainder of the season. The point of acquiring Marshon Lattimore at the price that you pay him for the next 2 years was the controllability of his contract and whatever you could get out of him in this postseason run. So the past is behind us. Wasn't that healthy, didn't play a whole lot. So what? They found a way to win their last five games. They won their last four. They've got momentum going into the playoffs. Now, this is a team that finished 7-2 at home and 9-3 in the NFC. So what that he didn't play a lot? He's going head-to-head with Evans this week. Mm-hmm. If you win this game, now you're playing Detroit, and you got to ask him to play Jameson Williams, or you're playing Minnesota, and he's going to have to run around with Justin Jefferson, or you're playing the Rams, and he's going to have to help you against Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. Like, this was the whole point. But, yeah, they played well and won a lot of games without him, mostly against teams that aren't as good as the ones they're going to start playing.
That's right. Yeah, you're leveling up.
Now, and that's why he's here. But the fact that he's completely good to go, I think it tells us that maybe this was strategic in holding him out here to just keep ramping him up, that they had a plan. And it seems like that's the case at a lot of positions where they're getting healthier and healthier as this week goes along. The other big news out of Commanders camp today was that they had four players named second team all pros, which is
what a time.
Quite an accomplishment. Like, what a time to be alive is right. I mean, think about this. I dug this up. There's 15 total second team or better all pros for this team in the last 24 years. So I just met a listener who's going to the playoff game in Tampa who was born in 2000. So going back to the year 2000, okay, when he was born, they've had 15 total guys on the top two all pro teams. They have four named today. Of those four, by the way, three were acquired by Peters in this front office this offseason. Terry McLaurin, the only holdover.
Mm-hmm.
Second-team All-Pro, well-deserved, been here for years, grinding. Now has a
thrill
quarterback
for him, man. Yeah.
To pair up with. And then two linebackers at a position they neglected under the Rivera regime for years, Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu, both in year one here, both veteran leaders in the locker room. And then a kick returner, Austin Eckler, who finished third in the NFL in kick return yards despite missing several weeks. Those are your four second-teamers. No first-team All-Pros, which is not surprising, but McLaurin, Wagner, Louvu, Eckler, all pros on the second team.
Pretty incredible, right? Take a bow, Adam Peters and company, Lance Newmark, everybody else responsible for that. And usage, so, you know, the Joe Witt and Kingsbury and company. I guess, you know, not so much Eckler on offense, but as special teams guy. But you see the point. The upgrades were massive and obvious. The glaring holes by that were filled to be fine, just to be normal. I actually wasn't thinking that Wagner would be a guy that would get second team all pro. It was possible for me that Louvu could sneak on there. Sneaks implies that he didn't deserve it, but a lot of guys do, you know. It just depends on if you're part of the cool kids club, right? If you're one of the linebackers with a return for a touchdown, or, you know, you've got your kind of special moment. But the fact is the talent level has been massively upgraded, and the only place you could go was up from previous, you know. Pretty incredible. And you got Taylor McLaurin, I'm sure. Terry McLaurin, who, as you said, finally has something worth a damn getting him the football, right? And it's very rare in my selfish fandom as an adult, GP, and even, you know, growing up as a kid, I never think about a player or whatever. I just think about the happiness that you can bring me, or that, or, you know, my entertainment value or whatever. It's very rare that somebody kind of crosses over where I legitimately am happy for him. Guys like Ryan Zimmerman, Max Scherzer, a couple others kind of crossed into that territory. Nicholas Backstrom did, and Alex Ovechkin did for hockey. Terry McLaurin is one of those guys. Like, he's in that camp where I go, I'm overjoyed at this. This is awesome for me, but I'm legitimately happy for him.
Look, I say this all the time. That stadium is McLaurin's stadium. When he catches a pass, they chant, Terry, Terry. They don't do that for anybody else. And that comes with pelts on the wall. That comes with going through something with somebody. That comes with, when I was showing up and paying good money to watch a crap team, you were balling out. I think that comes with playing at a position that is a diva position, where all around the league, statues crumble for me. No, all around the league, wide receivers are throwing fits every single time. They don't get five targets. They don't get four catches. They don't go for 100 yards. Tyreek Hill misses the playoffs once, and he's lighting the locker room on fire, basically, in Miami. You know what Terry McLaurin's done? As he's caught passes from every jabroni this side of the Mississippi over the years here, worked his butt off, yep, gone out, and been a pro, and then stayed here and got paid, and then did it again. So, yeah, there is a love for that guy.
Rightfully
that
so.
Is earned. It's not just you got drafted and you're awesome. It's that plus years and years of putting in the work. That there is a love affair with this fan base. But if you go through the credentials, you know, McLaurin, 1,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, five straight 1,000-yard seasons. I saw this stat. This was a good stat. The list of players in the league that have had 75 catches and 1,000 yards the last 5 years, Terry McLaurin and Travis Kelce. That's it.
How about that?
One of those guys dates Taylor Swift, and the other is Terry McLaurin. Bobby Wagner, 132 tackles for him, 11 straight years for him on the top two teams, first or second team All-Pro. 11 straight years. This is a Hall of Famer in our
midst. Yeah, what size gold jacket you wear, buddy?
Like, I don't know what we call – there's the Hall of Fame, and then in the Hall of Fame, there's the list of, like, the best in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
He's in that.
Yeah.
He's upper easily tier. A Hall of Famer. But, like, if you just cut the Hall of Fame in half – Bobby Wagner goes into the other, cooler, behind-the-rope portion of the Hall of Fame. I saw that only Reggie White among players in, like, the last few decades on defense have had a longer run of years where you were a first- or second-team All-Pro.
That's wild.
Than Bobby Wagner. I mean, Luvu's a massive success for this front office, Danny. Free agent, 8 sacks, 14 hits, 7 passes defended, wrecking ball on the second level. But they paid him like this is what he would be,
mm-hmm,
when he had not really, and it's not his fault, but he had never been given the chance to be this. So that valuational win for Peters and company. And then Eckler's the most interesting one to me because he was hurt so much,
yeah,
of the second half of the year. But third in the league in kick return yards, 31.3 yards per return this year speaks for itself. Had 5 kickoff returns ever. I give Quinn a lot of credit for this one. Or maybe it's special team staff, but they looked at Austin Eckler, who's never been a kick returner, in the preseason, and they said, that's our kick returner.
He's going to do that.
It's like, are you sure you want to take the running back who's really important and do that? Second team All-Pro.
Yeah, how about it, right? He's great with the new rules, too. Like, this is such a Wild West. This is one of those times in general. Now, in 10, 15, 20 years, it'll become old hat if they kind of keep the rules as they are now, and we'll take it for granted. But when everything is brand new, there's no paradigm. There's no, this is how we do this because we have a best practice. Teams handle that kickoff and returns wildly differently across the league, right? And Washington did better at it, frankly, than most teams did, whether it's kicking them all in the landing zone, average starting field position, their return game was really good. Austin Eckler's excellent at it. He's really good. You usually associate that kick returner with, you know, that whether it's the straight-ahead speed or a Kamonte Turpin type guy, sorry to bring that name up as he, you know,
Say earmuffs, and then you can say whatever you want.
You say whatever you want. I'm not trying to make a point, Frank. Don't celebrate it. But, like, you go through that, and Eckler doesn't look like some of those guys in terms of his build, and he's, you know, as a goal line threat. He's always the guy that's plunging into the goal line, et cetera. But he was awesome as a kick returner. So well-deserved for him, too. Love that guy.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Busy celebratory day on Friday in Ashburn. They fly to Tampa Bay tomorrow. Game is Sunday night. In front of the country, under the lights. Everybody wanted to get their hands on this matchup. Jaden Daniels in primetime. NBC got it. Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, as we get you ramped up for playoff football in the nation's capital here. Next, there is an update on Jalen Hurts' availability this weekend. That'll send some major shift through the NFC playoff picture, so we will get to that. Also, the Cleveland Browns got bad Deshaun Watson injury news, which is actually good news for them, I think, sadly to say, with the guy dealing with an injury.
Mm.
But we will tackle that as well and take our first look at the playoff matchups as we are one day away from kicking off the first of 6 in the NFL. We're live at Hyde Social in Clarendon. This is an awesome bar.
What a gorgeous place this is.
So pretty.
Seriously.
So nice. Great spot to watch games, though. They got TVs all over the joint. They put audio over the speakers for all the games, including this weekend. Back live at Hyde Social in Clarendon, where Grant and Danny, you are listening to the Fan. We're getting you ready for playoff football. The Commanders and the Bucks on Sunday night under the lights. Burgundy and gold wearing fans making their way out today. We'll be here until 6:30, 4 hours from now. So come celebrate with us. Be part of a little pep rally we're putting together as the day goes on. As you get out of the office, maybe leave the office a little bit early. come on out and enjoy the day
with
your buddy.
It's a Friday before a postseason matchup. Why not do something like that?
I mean, if your boss has questions, here's what you say. Where were you in 2020, boss? That was the last time this team made the playoffs. And I wasn't even allowed to go to the games because of COVID. Fans weren't allowed to go to the game. The last time you got to go to a playoff game was 2015, 9 years ago, Danny. That's like, with life expectancy, that's an eighth of a lifetime. If your boss is giving grief about that, tell him to kick rocks and see what that happens. See what that gets you.
Just look him right in the eye, point and say kick rocks. Look, just see what happens.
It could be a really interesting experiment.
And if he gets mad, he or she gets mad,
right,
just go, you fell for that? I was just kidding. I'll be back at my desk.
When you need me.
Yeah.
That little cubicle over
right
there. Before we get to this weekend's games and picking some upsets and some potential blowouts, I want to look at the NFL news of the day. Jalen Hurts is out of concussion protocol. Seemed like a little bit of a formality, but it was starting to linger.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, it takes long enough where you get the end of the week, basically, until he's finally cleared.
So he's going to play against the Green Bay Packers, Eagles at home, Lincoln Financial Field. That's the second of three games, Sunday afternoon. But he missed a lot of practice time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, didn't play in their final couple of games. So you're talking about now essentially 2.5 weeks where he was either limited or non-participant in practice. I don't know why more people aren't talking about the Eagles possibly being right for the taking here. I know Green Bay's super banged up as well, and maybe that's the whole
point.
That's my
comeback there, yeah.
Jordan Love's elbow is dinged, and he's on the injury report, and they lost Christian Watson this week, although he never really plays anyway. But I think Green Bay is a tough team to play. That's a portable offense. You know, Josh Jacobs is a mauler. They run the football. They got a really good play-action scheme married to the run with Matt LaFleur. Their defense is better than I think it was been this year, but nobody's really talking about Green Bay being a lively underdog here. That's a 7-2 matchup at the Link on Sunday.
Yeah, I've seen the line as big as 5.5 in some places. It usually settles into the 4.5-5 range.
Which sounds like not a big deal, but think about it. The Commanders are 3-point underdogs.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point.
I mean, it's almost twice the line for a Packers team that was, for much of this year, considered better than Washington.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this. Green Bay's pretty good. I think their ceiling is lower than some of these teams that are in the postseason, but that doesn't mean that the floor is low, too. That is a pain in the butt to play against, right? I mean, as physical as they are, pretty good defensive team as well. This basically is setting up to be, if Jordan Love can go and be himself, you might have one of those, here's your signature playoff game, early in his career, type deals. Or it could be a nagging thing. He's not quite right, as has happened a couple times over the course of this year, and Philadelphia holds serve at home as a really good team.
I was talking to my buddy a couple days ago who covers the Eagles, and I'm like, what am I missing? Why is nobody talking about them being at risk of being knocked off? And he's like, well, you're missing that they've won 12 of their last 13. That when they had a backup quarterback, they won. When they had a third-string quarterback, they won.
Right.
Okay, I stand corrected. Like, yes,
they're really good. Yeah.
I understand that. And some of it might just be me. I saw Washington hang 40 on them, basically, where Jaden Daniels threw the 5 touchdowns against the number one defense in the league. And I'm like, that's the group? That's the defense? Are we sure?
Mm-hmm.
That was only a few weeks ago. But I do think that's going to be a good game. It sounds like Jalen Hurts is going to go. So all systems a go for the Eagles offensively. A quarterback that is injured and won't be playing anytime soon, Deshaun Watson. How about this story out of Cleveland today? He re-tore his Achilles tendon. He's supposed to be months into his recovery now.
Start it over.
And it now resets the hourglass to get him back. Now, I shouldn't joke about serious injuries because it's awful and it stinks that guy's going to be out for a calendar year and probably miss all of next year. But I don't know if this is a bad thing for the Browns, because 2 years ago when he was hurt, Jacoby Brissett was better. Last year when he was hurt, Joe Flacco was better. This year when he was hurt, Jameis Winston, who got benched, was better. I mean, he has been one of the worst quarterbacks in the National Football League since the moment he got one of the biggest fully guaranteed contract at the time in the history of North American sports, and the only one of its kind in the NFL. It's been a complete disaster, but just having him not on the field and maybe not in the building that much might be addition by subtraction.
Yeah, just force you to go in a different direction, right? I mean, it's hard to overstate how disastrous that contract has been. I mean, the Watson's agent and company convinced the Browns that this is going to be the new paradigm. you're going to, if you want a quarterback, you're going to give them these hundreds of millions of dollars guaranteed. And every other NFL team said, no, we're not doing that. We'll slowly increase the amount of guaranteed money. We'll incrementally move up the ladder, as we've always done. We're not doing this. Whatever this is, we're not doing it. We're not in that business. So, yeah, I mean, Cleveland, a pretty talented roster. They're among the grave disappointments in the NFL. They should, them, the Jets, maybe a couple other teams. But everybody knows that the Browns have a lot of pieces, a lot of things that a lot of teams would want, and they've been quarterback starved for so long. Imagine being in that bucket, am I right? But they've been in this place where they're so desperate, whether it's first-round picks, whether it's veterans, stopgaps, everything in between, nothing has worked. They were desperate, and, you know, they turned to Watson and made one of the great terrible deals in league history.
I think that this is simultaneously the worst contract and the worst trade maybe in modern NFL history.
It's certainly in the conversation.
Because people forget this. They did not sign Deshaun Watson to that contract as a free agent. They traded a 2022 first and fourth, a 2023 first and third, and a 2024 first and fourth. We're talking about 3 years of first rounders, six draft picks, none of them later than the fourth round, to just then pay him all of that money. I mean, it is unbelievable when you look back and you go, well, you know, it's just bad luck because they had no idea he was in trouble. He was already an outcast,
oh, yeah,
run out of the league with two dozen women having come out to say, yeah, that's a bad guy who did this thing to me. And they still made that trade and gave him all that money. It's hard to feel bad for them. I mean, I am empathetic. What is the, you know, I'm an empath, I guess.
You're an empath.
What you would say.
Yeah, I've said that about you.
I don't know, man. It is really hard for me to feel for the Browns. But I will say that is an interesting opening now for whether that – if they want to go veteran route, do you think Aaron Rodgers has something left? Would he go play in Cleveland? Probably not. Do you think Kirk Cousins has something left? Is that someone – with Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota at one point in time? Do they draft somebody? They're not picking as high as they are this year most of the time. It would stand to reason maybe that they just draft a QB and – Deshaun Watson never starts for them again, and they just pay him a lot of money. I don't know where they go.
I don't either.
But I think if you're Stefanski or their GM, Andrew Berry, you just kind of have to decide, we've made the mistake. We can't – the sunk fast
sunk cost fallacy. Yep.
That fallacy thing of, like, we can't keep paying into the mistake. The money's going to be paid out. It doesn't mean he also has to make our team worse on the field.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, so the way I've tried to quantify it to people is – I have empathy and sympathy for Browns fans. I really do. They've been through it, man. For the organization, I don't have any sympathy, but I understand, is the way that I would describe it. I get being desperate for a quarterback. In fact, I was the idiot who said, like, I think Washington should consider this. Now, that contract that they would have lost the bidding or whatever, not because I think Deshaun Watson's a good dude, but I need a quarterback. I will do anything. I will do whatever do, legal or otherwise, to find one, because they're worth so damn much. And, you know, turns out that journey led us to Jaden Daniels and, you know, no regrets there.
Only a few years later.
Yeah, it took a minute.
It didn't lead you right to Jaden Daniels.
And that's kind of the point.
That was a circuitous path.
Yeah, but so for Cleveland, I understand. They are as desperate as you could possibly be for any modicum of stability and dare I say even excellence in that position. So they turn to this. And it could not have gone worse. I mean, literally, if you were to write a scenario, what's the worst that could happen? This is pretty much it. I mean, his cap number is $72.9 million this year, $72.9 million next year, in 2025 and 26, with $46 million guaranteed in each season. Now, I think they've already done some kind of restructure thing, and it makes this
more
avoidable. They'll
add a bunch of void years to knock the cap number down.
Whatever. The point is, they are hosed.
Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
All right, let's look at the six games starting tomorrow, Saturday through Monday, NFL playoffs, 4:30 kick for the Chargers and the Texans, and then the nightcap tomorrow night, Steelers-Ravens. We get a pair of AFC games. Sunday's the one triple header. Broncos-Bills feels lopsided, but Bo Nix is coming off of his best game of the year against the Chiefs backups. Josh Allen gunning for the MVP will have his chance to answer whatever Lamar Jackson does the previous evening in game one of that triple header. Packers-Eagles, we just talked about. Jordan Love's going to go, as well as Jalen Hurts, both of those guys on the injury report. And then you got the Commanders-Bucks to wind things down on Sunday night. Monday Night Football, Vikings-Rams has been moved. That game no longer in L.A. Look, our thoughts – are with all of the people dealing with what is a horrendous situation in Los Angeles. But on our little football show, if I could just say as an aside, please don't think that this is me saying that this is important in the grand scheme of life. Tough for the Rams, who fought hard for their home field. Now you go to Phoenix last minute. Like Minnesota, you're scrambling. You're going to play a neutral site game as a favorite in that 4-5 matchup. So, Danny, I ask you this. The most likely game where we see an upset, so that means Chargers favorite over the Texans. It would be a Houston win, a Pittsburgh win, the Broncos knocking off the Bills, Green Bay over Philly, Washington, Tampa Bay, or the Rams on a neutral site beating the Vikings as the 4 seed. Most likely upset for you is what?
Honorable mention to Washington over Tampa Bay, but to me it's the Rams. I know the adversity is struck. I know it's it's not fair. Again, it's obviously so trivial compared to what people are experiencing in real life. But you look at this Rams team, they've got scary elements. They've got all the ingredients. A veteran quarterback that has fared well against Brian Flores' defense in terms of how they blitz. It's very Todd Bowles-esque how Flores and company come up with all sorts of blitzes and different schemes and designs. You got two excellent receivers, a running game, and pretty good coaching there in Los Angeles. And to me, it's not fair because the larger sample says that Sam Darnold had a great year, and him and Kevin O'Connell making beautiful music. It's not fair that I have this assessment. But I still don't trust him when it comes to a game like this. I feel like L.A. has its way, and I think they win this game outright.
I think it's the Commanders, honestly. If I had to pick one upset, I mean, there's pick'em games to be played, really, between Chargers, Texans, Washington, Tampa Bay, and the Vikings and the Rams. But I like Minnesota more than I like Tampa Bay. I like, frankly, the Chargers more than I like Tampa Bay in their matchups. If Baker Mayfield turns the ball over, I think it's the Commanders actually have a chance to win the thing by a touchdown or so. I don't know that I'm even picking them, but if I'm tasked with finding the one team that pulls off the upset, I don't know that anybody's got a better chance than the Commanders. How many points do we think Washington needs to score to win this game? Like, if I was to tell you they scored X amount of points, how far do we have to go before you say, oh, then they won? Let's get into that next on Grant and Danny. We'll check in on the Bucks and scout the opponent with TJ Reeves, who works the sideline for their broadcasts in Tampa. We're at Hyde Social in Clarendon. We'll be here until 6:30, getting ready for playoff football on The Fan. So in both of our commercial breaks, since we've gotten here, Chuck and the crew have sent out just plates and plates of delicious food, and we've just been destroying food. I just ate four of the best wings I've had in a long time.
These are fantastic.
Yeah, really, really good. I'm going to make a suggestion. If you're coming out to Hyde Social to celebrate the Commanders-Bucks playoff game with us today, I want you to get some wings. I want you to do that. I want you to – what were those dry rub wings we just ate?
That's Old Bay.
That's what it tastes
like. That's your Old Bay wing.
That's a good meatball. That's a good wing.
It's very good. A little bit.
You should enjoy those.
The Bang Bang Shrimp are teeing, Miss Davis. Teeing! I also had a Tex-Mex egg roll.
I've noticed you were hovering by the table a bunch.
I hovered.
There?
Well, I ate a bunch. And
I don't blame you.
You know what I don't do well is pace myself. And I've already made a sow of myself to this point, and more food is apparently on the way. So, yeah, I am going to be the guy you have to roll out of here at the very end.
There's going to be a time where we're all going to have to lift Danny up. You guys will have to help us to get him out of here. But we're getting ready for football. We'll give you a detailed breakdown of the Commanders and the Bucks next hour. We're also going to scout Tampa Bay with TJ Reeves. But I just threw this question at you. It just kind of hit me as I'm thinking about this game. What is the point total you would need to feel like they're definitely going to win? Where would you be confident? In other words, if I said Washington scores 14 points, you go, they lose.
They're losing that one, yeah.
If I say they score 17, they still lose. If I say they score 20, you could convince me maybe a couple Baker turnovers, ill-timed fumble by Irving, they win a 20-17 game in overtime. But I think the chances of that are low. There's going to be points scored.
Mm-hmm.
This is the highest total, for people that don't know, of all the playoff games in this round. The expectation is both teams, which are top five scoring offenses in the NFL, the Commanders score 28 points a game, the Bucks score 29 points a game, fourth and third respectively in scoring this year, that they're going to both move the ball, score points. So, Danny, what do they have to score for you to go into the game feeling good that they're going to win?
North of 30. I mean, to me,
it's got to be over 30.
It's got to be over 30. Now, here's the thing. I tend to think that games like this, when we all think it's going to be a wild shootout, it's going to be 44-42 like that Bills-Rams game was, or you know, something picturesque, tends to slow down a little bit. I think Washington's going to try to kind of limit possessions here. If you get 10, 11 possessions for each team, it might end up in this kind of shootout situation. But I think they're going to try to matriculate. I think they're going to try to use their offense as a way to get some defense going here. But I just don't think they can stop Tampa Bay. I don't think they will. So when Tampa has the ball, I think they're pretty much scoring, unless you know you get something unforeseen, whether it's a holding penalty, something else to derail the drive, or a turnover otherwise. So I think it's going to end up in that 30-point range. I think
so.
It's gonna,
if they score 30, you would not pick them to win.
If they score 30, I'd pick them to win.
Okay, yeah. 28.
I'd say it's likely they win. But to me, okay, you were talking about feeling comfortable.
So now we're coming down.
It's in that upper 20s to 30. To me, 30 makes me feel secure.
I think 27 is where I start to like their chances.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking this is my lean right now. We'll make our final predictions at the end of the show. This, to me, feels like a 27-24 football game. 30-27 kind of football game. So we're thinking similarly.
Yep.
I'm looking at what the Bucs did recently. They scored 27 in a win against the Saints. But remember, they played like...
They were terrible. That's one of the worst games. Yeah.
For a half. I was trying to use a word that I'm allowed to use. Sometimes when you're just sitting with, hanging out with the guys at a sports bar, you almost use the wrong
you
word.
You almost do it, yeah.
They played like dog water, to quote a 13-year-old.
Hacking.
For a half of football. Still scored 27. The week before that, now, they had Carolina's number. Like, they just did whatever they wanted. They scored 48 in that game. There is some high power, octane, to this offense. 40 against the Chargers in a win a couple of weeks ago. But they lost to the Cowboys 26-24, right? You got the 27-19 game with the Saints. They scored 28 in a win over the Raiders, 26 in a win over Carolina. I think if you're in that 27-30 window, you're going to be in a pretty good spot. That's where you need to go, because I'm also banking on Mayfield leading the league in picks and turnover-worthy plays. Tampa's not going to score on 7-8 possessions. I think you got to bow up in the red area and hold them to a couple of field goals. And you need to turn him over twice. That's my path. If you can force two field goals and turn Baker Mayfield over twice, now they're not scoring over 24. Now I'm winning a football game.
I mean, just for example, since their bye week, okay, they have not had, they've had less than 400 yards one time, 395 against the Saints, the most recent game. Conversely, Washington has had over 400 yards one time over their last five, right? As you kind of look at who's trending in what direction with this matchup. Even when they struggled against the Cowboys and they lost that game, they still managed over 410 yards. They are going to move the football. They're going to score points. So to me, that's why that higher point total is there.
How healthy is Tampa Bay? We've heard a lot about their secondary being beleaguered. I want to get some details on that from TJ Reeves, who covers the Bucs, who's their sideline reporter on their radio broadcast. He's going to join us next, right here to scout the opponent on Grant and Danny. We're at Hyde Social. We'll be here until 6:30. We're in Clarendon. Awesome place to hang out. Beautiful bar, delicious food. We are getting ready for postseason football on The Fan.